Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Death of Death, where we proclaim Christ's victory over sin, death, and everything else. I'm your host, as always, Nick Stewart. Hope you're doing well today. You look gorgeous, as always. Quick reminder to head over to the online store and get yourself a sticker. Just click shop from the homepage of deathofdeath.net. And I also just added a Patreon button to the homepage as well. So if you haven't joined the Elect yet, you can get there easily from the homepage. All right, jumping into the show for today. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, it is Election Day. In episode 39, I talked a bit about the upcoming election, giving some encouragements to anyone who might be stressed out or preoccupied about it. But what I want to talk about today is statism, specifically the belief in a large government with centralized control over social and economic affairs. Statism is a false religion. I know I've talked about this before, but exposing this idolatry is pretty tough. Your feedback on this will be really helpful because some of the stuff I'm still thinking through, you know, not all of it, but some of it is still, you know, up for debate in my mind. And the only way you and I will both get better at having this conversation is if we talk to each other about it. So any comments, questions, or refutations can be emailed to contact@deathofdeath.net, and we can dialogue about some of this stuff. So, you know, back in 2019, like, man, what would you give to go back to 2019, right? I guess I wouldn't, because I wasn't married and I still lived in California, so I guess I might not do that. But back in 2019, your politics didn't affect much of your day-to-day life. You know, if you're like me, you like to think about theories and philosophies and stuff when it comes to politics, but theory was not, was not the world that we lived in. But in 2020, politics actually started to affect everybody's everyday life. So the option of living in the world of theory and philosophy on political issues ended, and it's over now. You know, we've all been forced to make decisions this year. Some of us may have had to disobey the government where before we were against that kind of thing, or some of us may have had to give in to gross overreach and tyranny where before we claimed we would have fought and died before doing that. So whatever the case, 2020 is the year that we stopped philosophizing and theorizing and actually had to make some decisions. You know, we as Christians are forced to have political positions now. It could be as simple as heeding the California governor's demands over, you know, how we conduct Thanksgiving, or it could be the choice to keep our churches open without all the regulations they're trying to put on us. You know, even if we're not articulating our positions, even if it's just actions or a means to an end, you know, we all have positions now. So it will be helpful for us to think through some of these things, and we should examine what the Bible actually says about authoritarian powers and how we should position ourselves to those powers. You know, it's not as simple as just, you know, holding things in theory anymore. Like, we actually are forced every single day to make a decision. You can't get groceries now without making a political decision. Whether you wear the mask or not, you're making a political stand now. So I think let's just talk about the concept of government. You know, like, should we talk about Romans 13? Of course. But is Romans 13 all the Bible has to say about government? Not even close. I know I mentioned this on episode 34 with Nick Quint, but if we really took everything the entire Bible says about government, the overall consensus is not all that positive. You know, we've got the Tower of Babel and Israel demanding a king to rule over them, and even the laws God gave for Israel to follow, you know, God has a lot of anti-government sentiments. And, you know, I'm not just creating God's view of government in my own image. You know, God is above government and he uses it for his purposes. Romans 13 tells us what God's purpose for government is, which is to punish wrongdoers. So what about a government that doesn't live up to those purposes? You know, what about when the government is punishing things like working or not wearing a certain garment in public? You know, yes, Jesus and Peter and Paul all tell us to pay our taxes, but they never say it would be wrong for a government not to tax people. So what would they say about America? You know, America is a country where it's technically illegal for the government to collect income taxes, so that's the complication for those of us living in America. If I was in the Soviet Union, then okay, I pay my taxes and do whatever the government says as long as I'm not going against God's law. In America, it's incredibly hard to determine who your ruler actually is. So who is Romans 13 telling me to obey? Am I to obey the Constitution, which is supposed to be the highest law in the land? Well, you know, if I did that, I would have to disobey basically every other facet of government, and it wouldn't take long for me to be put in jail, you know, by paying income taxes or wearing a mask in public. I'm actually supporting the wicked rulers who are disobeying the highest law in the land and trying to usurp its authority. So, you know, the issue with following the Constitution, you know, which I don't know if I have to do because I'm not actually sworn to uphold it like people in the government are, but like, the issue with following that is that, you know, you can't get groceries if you do that. You can't stay out of jail if you do that now. So it's not as simple as just following the highest law in the land. I actually believe that's the main reason we're exhorted in the Bible to obey our rulers. It's not necessarily because they're good, but because it's pointless to go to jail for breaking stupid laws. Like, the coins are made in Caesar's image, and we're made in God's image. We don't belong to the state. We belong to a higher authority than the state. So, like, why get thrown into prison just because we wouldn't give, you know, give in to the unjust demands of the state, you know? Again, that's why it's harder for us to follow Romans 13 in America. Like, are we supposed to obey the president above any other ruler? Well, for some of us, we'd have to disobey our own governor to do that. And all the complications go on and on and on. I'm in, you know, Oklahoma City now, and here the city council enacted a mask mandate, and it has extended it twice now because they keep putting expiration dates on it. They're still, you know, relatively hopeful it'll stop. But the governor of Oklahoma is unwilling to force masks on people. So who am I supposed to obey, the city council or the governor? So that's why the conversation for American Christians isn't as simple as just obeying our rulers. You know, there's a lot to consider in that. If there was a king or an emperor, it would be easier to follow that, you know. But for us, obeying our rulers usually means disobeying another and therefore taking part in usurping another ruler's authority. And in a country like this, founded upon the principles of liberty and the non-aggression principle for the most part, it's not inappropriate to be against centralized control of the state. It's written into our law. So here we're a little more free to talk theory, you know, to talk in the abstract. So let's first talk about the concept of the state. And it is just that. The state is just a concept. It's an idea. Hundreds of years ago, some people took control of this land and appointed themselves as senators and congressmen and presidents. And there's nothing objectively different about our rulers that puts them in charge of us besides winning a popularity contest. You know, in reality, the people in government are some of the most corrupt and most unintelligent people in the country. And people who have the characteristics of natural and good leaders don't tend to go into government. You know, they tend to start multi-billion dollar companies and create jobs and value for people, all the while fighting against the government to keep what they've actually earned. So the only thing that sets the state apart from us is the monopoly on violence. You know, they enforce unjust laws because they can throw you in jail for not following them. Like, without that force, they would be no different than someone standing on their rooftop demanding money and power. And then what happens? Nothing. Because it's just some guy making ridiculous demands. Without force, they couldn't do what they actually wanted to do and therefore wouldn't actually have any power. So in the, you know, if you look in the abstract, the state is just made up of people who have all the force and violence necessary to impose their will on people. And in that way, they're really no different than a, you know, warlord or a street gang. The difference is they convince people that they're different. You know, people will point to Somalia and, you know, tell me that, you know, that's a country with no government. Do you want to live there? But it's not accurate to say that there's no government there, because there are pirate warlords in Somalia and they're the ones imposing their will on people through force and violence. So that makes them the state, technically. They have the exact same rights as the U.S. government, but the U.S. government has done a better job of dressing their violence up as democracy and freedom, you know? Well, we vote on things here, you know, yeah, but we don't vote on whether we'll have a government or not, but they maintain our freedom. No, they don't. They're probably the largest source of theft and oppression in the country, you know? But it all comes down to this blind faith that people have in the system. That's how it exists. You know, the state is just people and organizations we call the government. You know, people enforce the demands of the state for the same reason. They simply believe the state has the authority to impose these rules, so they enforce it. If everyone just stopped believing in the state, it would go away. That's how tenuous a thing it really is. So it's like hard to believe there's any objective value or entitlement in a thing that only exists by faith. So it's hard to believe that there's any objective value or entitlement in a thing that only exists by faith, you know? And people, you know, sometimes say, well, like, you know, is the White House imaginary? If the state's just an idea, then where's the White House and the Pentagon come from? And it's like, yeah, you know, structures based on a false religion are not proof of the claims of that religion. You know, a mosque is not proof of Islam's credibility. You know, it's like the idea that someone, you know, acted on an idea does not make the idea correct. It's not just blind faith that makes statism a false religion. You know, think about the ways it competes with religion. You know, when I was reading my Bible, I just finished the Gospels recently, and at the end of all the Gospel books are the accounts of the crucifixion. And one of the things that stuck out to me was the diametric opposition of King Jesus and King Caesar. Like, one of the main accusations the Jews leveled against Jesus was that he was a threat to the throne. You know, we have no king but Caesar, they cried. And, you know, if you're a Patreon supporter, then on Friday, you got the exclusive October episode, and we told a few spooky stories from church history. And one of the ones we talked about, a related story, you know, was the Decian persecution in 250 AD. Emperor Decius mandated that every Roman citizen had to make a sacrifice to Roman gods, and, you know, for the good of the state. And this led to massive amounts of Christian executions, because a lot of Christians wouldn't do it, you know? Imagine that, Christians disobeying the state for their religion. But the point is, large empires have always been enemies of religion, but they simultaneously try to fill that hole, you know? Like, we hate Christianity, and we're going to put all these Christians to death, and we also need you to make a ritual sacrifice for us. You know, it just doesn't really seem to add up. And in this country, the state has also replaced religion slowly but surely, and they started in the obvious place, education. You know, we've talked about it on the show before, but there's a reason the state has such a stranglehold on education. It forces kids to go to state-approved schools, and it's the biggest funder of academic research and development. And now, why would that be? You know, it used to be the church that was the source of academia and education. So why would the state want to take the church's place like that? Probably because you can benefit from controlling the way people think. You know, it pretty much is that simple. People are raised from preschool all the way through college to think exactly how the state wants them to think. You know, that's why people such as myself, who think the state is useless and destructive, are viewed as the crazy, stupid people, because everyone is taught their whole lives how necessary and good the state is. You know, when someone comes along and says something contrary to what you've always been taught, you tend to look at that person as a little crazy, you know. Tom Woods has an analogy he always uses involving Walmart And I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but he basically says, like, what if Walmart was in control of education and your kid had to go to a Walmart approved school and learn all about Walmart, and they had to learn all about all the CEOs of Walmart and hear these mythical stories like the first Walmart CEO never told a lie and stuff like that. And then they grow up to worship Walmart and think we could never live without Walmart. And it's like, well, I wonder why I like Walmart so much. That's weird. Like, didn't they learn anything objective in school? We can see kind of a modicum of this in the issue of climate change. Climate change is a fact, sure, because the climate has always changed for all of natural history, and it will continue to do so. You know, that's kind of the genius of the marketing of the issue that way. Like, you can't really be a climate change denier in the strictest sense, because of course the climate changes. Like, the issue is not whether it changes, but whether it's man-made and whether it's a threat. You know, there's little evidence to suggest it's man-made, but even if it was, there's no evidence that it's a threat to our existence. So, like, why do all the scientists believe it's a threat? They don't. You know, there are plenty of scientists who don't believe it's a threat. And, like, why don't you ever hear from them? Because they won't be funded, like the ones who play along with what the government says. And if they do procure funding from a private source, they'll be blackballed by all the other scientists who do play along with what the government says, and then they still won't get any exposure. And why would the government want us believing in something like life-threatening climate change? Well, you know, if you don't see how the state could benefit from endless regulation and control over people, then I really can't help you. Like, you've definitely come to the wrong place in regard to these issues. You can tell what they really think about, these issues by the way that they act. And that's kind of the man behind the curtain secret when it comes to the state. Like, they create all these restrictions because of the virus, but then they don't wear masks, and they get caught going into salons when they're supposed to be closed. And think about the virus compared to climate change. You know, they did the lockdowns to supposedly save 2 million lives. They think the climate change is going to end our species in about 15 years, and they didn't do anything near that drastic. You know, like, they obviously don't take climate change as seriously as they want us to believe, because they reacted a lot more drastically to the virus. But what happens when I point out all the problems with the lockdown, like all the faulty numbers and statistics and the outright lies and the illogical nature of it? Like, well, good sir, that's blasphemy. You know, they would never say that, but they certainly act as though it is. Like, my goodness, the hysteria with which people respond to anything that doesn't fit the narrative. Like, it's amazing. It's the only movement that I've ever seen where objectively good news is met with hostility. Like, there are people who truly don't want things to go back to normal. You know why? Because their God told them the way things are gonna be from now on, and that's the only way this makes sense. Like, to, in all honesty, like, people went from going to live shows and the movie theater and, you know, hanging out with friends and going to bars and stuff. They went from that to considering those activities morally reprehensible. Like, overnight, people changed their minds about that. And I'm not even exaggerating. Like, it is morally reprehensible to do certain things now that they were doing just earlier this year. You know, what could have possibly changed people's thinking so quickly besides a divine decree? I think that's what really bothers me so much about the mask. I mean, like, it pushes my mustache hairs up into my nose, and it's really irritating, so I go without it whenever possible. But it's more than that. Like, this is a religious movement. It's not even the mask so much that bothers me as much as what it represents, you know? Like, it really feels like I'm participating in a religious rite when I wear that stupid mask. Like, I can't even tell you how many people have told me, like, oh, I know it doesn't work that well, but, like, it just makes me feel better. And it's like, that's a superstition. Like, there's no other way to describe that kind of thing. And beyond that, it is a symbol of compliance and servitude, you know? like, you are saying, I believe whatever the state tells me, even though they've never told me, you know, one thing that was true, and I will look down my nose at you for not participating. I'm not saying everyone who wears a mask is saying that, but for those of you who make a moral issue out of it, that's what you're saying. You know, that's as good a segue as I'm going to get to, you know, the statist rituals, but now we've got the masks, the religious cloth, which is kind of the new outward symbol of statism, but, you know, we've had rituals for a long time. There's the voting and the State of the Union addresses and the debates and, you know, all this fanfare. You know, the election is a high holy day, and we've been having these sacred rituals leading up to it, and voting is our little role to play in the holy day as well. It's a participatory ritual in that way, and I saw a meme the other day that compared those little stickers you get that say I voted to participation trophies. I thought that was pretty funny. The hypocritical worship of democracy is one of the worst parts about it, to be honest. Like, it's, I don't know, I just noticed it this year, but I see it everywhere I look now, and it just bugs the crap out of me. Like, you mentioned not voting or not believing in democracy, and it's straight up blasphemy, like, no question about it. And it's so inconsistent that I just can't wrap my head around it. Like, this is a massive generalization, but go with me on this. I'm just trying to prove a point. But, like, people are voting for Trump because, like, why? Like, what's a reason you've heard not to vote for Trump? Because they don't want socialism. Like, as if the establishment Democrats are socialists, but that's another story altogether. But they champion the Democratic cause. Like, we've got to get out there and vote or they'll win. Like, the evil will win. Why are you supporting a system where evil can win? That's my question. Like, wouldn't it be better to have a system where socialism isn't even an option? Like, technically, the democracy we have here could get us socialism, right? Like, if the majority goes out and votes for socialized things, that's exactly where we're going to end up. So is that a bad thing? That's the tricky part, because if you say it's a bad thing that the majority gets what they want, then you don't really believe in democracy at all. That's the reality. Like, nobody really believes in this crap. They believe in democracy when they win. That's why it bothers me so much, because, like, it's only democracy when I win. Like, why do you think the Democratic Party has been casting doubt over the legitimacy of Donald Trump's win in 2016? Like, because the wrong side won. They're quick to point out that Hillary got the popular vote, and, like, maybe we shouldn't have the Electoral College anymore. And, you know, Russia actually interfered with the election and skewed the results, and, you know, whatever the story is. Seems like there's a different one every week, but, like, we have to get the idea across that he's not the duly elected president of the United States. Otherwise, we have to admit that we don't actually believe in democracy. If Trump had won the popular vote and lost in the Electoral College, the exact opposite arguments would be made. Like, the Republicans would be talking about getting rid of the Electoral College, and the Democrats would be explaining why we need it. And both sides are already casting doubt on today's election. You know, I guess I can say today. It's tomorrow when I'm recording this, but you're listening to it on election day or later. You know, they're already casting doubt on today's election. You know, Trump is saying the mail-in ballots are compromised, and the Democrats are already, you know, talking about Russia again. Like, Russia's going to interfere with Trump getting elected again. And it's just ridiculous. But my point is, if your system is just as likely to get evil things like socialism, is it a good system? And, like, whether or not socialism is even evil isn't a debate at this point. It always leads to death and starvation. You know, if democracy can let that kind of evil flourish, then it's not a very good system, is it? But it feels like blasphemy, doesn't it? You know? What about the flag? Oh, man. That's just... You can't touch the flag. It's a piece of cloth. But if we drop it on the ground, we've committed a sin, and there's a ritual we have to go through to make up for it, involving burning it. You know, it seems like blasphemy, doesn't it? To drop the flag on the ground. Don't dismiss what I'm saying right now, because, like, you might really need to hear this, and maybe I do too in some ways. But if you feel like that's blasphemy, really think about it. like really examine if you're practicing a false religion. The truth is that, you know, we're all hardwired to worship. We all know that. That's why anyone who rejects Christ still worships something. You know, their family or the government or, you know, their hobby or whatever. Like, most of the time for atheists, they worship the state. And that's why things like communism and socialism tend to come out of atheistic worldviews. But unfortunately, Christians also fall prey to this kind of false religion. Like, it's hard not to, in all honesty. Like, it's hard when you're born in the U.S. and basically raised to accept whatever the U.S. government does. And, you know, we also have this ingrained pride in the U.S. because we're taught to believe it's a free country and a Christian nation, you know. For me, I can remember some brainwashing that started when I was about 7 and the towers fell. You know, flags were everywhere. And you know what else was everywhere? Ignorance and racism. Like, ignorance of what actually happened on 9/11. And I'm not talking about 9/11 conspiracies. I'm talking about U.S. involvement in the Middle East for decades that led to a retaliation that is now known as 9/11. That got dressed up as they attack us because we're free. And there was the ignorance, you know, about what actually had taken place. But the tribe mentality set in pretty quick, you know, like, now those people were just ragheads who deserved to get bombed. Like, sorry for the jarring pejorative term, but I don't want you to forget the way people spoke back then, in all honesty. Like, that was the sentiment everywhere you went. We should go over there and bomb those sand expletives, you know? Like, innocent U.S. citizens were attacked and killed that day, and you better never forget why. Not because we're free, but because of our government doing things they shouldn't have been doing and bombing other countries. And, you know, I feel the same way about kids living through this dog and pony show known as 2020. You know, like, I hope they never forget who did this to them. Like, I feel bad for kids living through this, you know, like seeing masks everywhere they go and not having normal relationships, like not being able to do all the things that they like doing. But as bad as I feel for them, I'm tempted not to do them any favors right now. You know, like, no, you shouldn't do school on Zoom. You shouldn't get a socially distanced prom or a drive-by birthday party, because you aren't going to learn anything if you do that. Like, I'm glad for any time that any child can get a sense of normalcy during all of this, but it's not going to teach them the lesson that they really need to learn. You know, don't forget who did this to you. They need to learn that false religions can do some pretty wicked things. You missed those 3 or 4 seasons of the sport you like to play? Yeah, good. Don't ever forget that it was the government that did that to you. You know, we gotta have a whole new generation of kids coming up who hate the state as much as I do. I think normalizing this for the kids is one of the worst things that we could do. Accepting this, you know, we should be teaching them to hate this kind of thing, you know, this kind of government action. But anyways, what was I saying? You know, the reason the state has such interest in academia is because they know those are the opinion molders. Academia trickles down in that way. You know, most people on the street couldn't tell you anything about rising sea levels, but they'll tell you that climate change is a threat to our species and the government needs to do something about it, you know, because that's what the opinion molders tell them. See, the church used to be the educators, but the state always realizes what an influential role that plays, you know, same as medicine, same as social causes. So the state takes over all these very influential areas of our lives so that they can perpetuate more and more devotion to themselves. All the state exists for, at the end of the day, is to keep itself going. That's why they control narratives, control opinion molders, control teaching, fight wars, you know, steal money. It's all just to keep themselves going. Like, want to know what the state takes most seriously? For what crimes will you receive the harshest punishments in this country? Crimes against the state, as a matter of fact. Treason, tax fraud, voter fraud, espionage. you know, flag burning has been ruled constitutionally protected, but it wasn't too long ago that people were being hanged for that kind of thing. You know, they tried to pass the Flag Protection Act in 1968, but it wasn't put into effect. But it could have gotten you up to a year in prison for desecrating an American flag. There have been several proposed amendments to the Constitution since then that would punish any desecration of the flag. As recently as 2019, there was something proposed and the Trump administration supported it. You know, so what does that tell you? It means that symbolism is pretty important to the government. And why? Why would it matter to the government if a symbol gets burned or stepped on? Like, because statism is a religion, and that would be blasphemy. Like, do we even think about the words that we use? Desecration? Desecrating the flag? Desecration means to treat something sacred with violence or disrespect. Do you know what sacred means? Connected with God or dedicated to a religious practice. You know, maybe we shouldn't be throwing around the term desecration when we're talking about a piece of cloth. You know, it's not just a cloth, it's a symbol. Yeah, it's still just a symbol of the country we live in. It's not on the same level with God, even if it is. And the reason the state cares so much about symbolism is because they realize the connection between the abstract and power. That's why they control academia. They know that ideas lead to action. They know that if people actually knew why the 9/11 attacks happened, we might kind of blame the government for that. You know, it might not feel like we got attacked at all. It might kind of feel like the government got attacked. You know, like they know if people knew how much their value their money loses every year because the Federal Reserve inflates our currency, they might kind of want to burn it to the ground in a weird way. You know, there seem to be a lot of riots lately. Yeah, I think the government stealing 10% of your money's value every year could be a pretty cool one to throw into the hat. Like if we get to start, you know. If we want to democratize our riots, we should start voting on what we riot on, you know, and I'm putting the Federal Reserve up there. By the way, I know the stated annual inflation rate is about 1.3 to 1.4%, but the stimulus they passed this year for the pandemic increased the amount of dollars in circulation by almost 200% overnight. So if I were a gambling man, I'd say the inflation rate is a lot higher than what they're saying. You know, like we're kind of being lied to. And guess what? It's widely accepted that the state have no idea what the Federal Reserve is doing. Like Ron Paul was a congressman for years, and even he could never find out what the Federal Reserve was up to. Again, getting off topic. My point is that controlling the abstract is very important when you're dealing with faith. Because if the people have faith in the state, then everything keeps running smoothly. If some actual fact comes along and starts to chip away at that faith, it's not, you know, it's not so good for business. So I really don't know where we go from here. That's the grand reveal at the end of this episode. I would say the government, the flag, the military, voting, all that. Just take everything related to the state and put it into a big bowl. And now everything in that bowl is part of a false religion. So be extremely careful and thoughtful about how you want to interact with it. You know, you can't avoid it. I'm not saying avoid it, but it's like, is your Jewish friend getting married? Okay. You know, I'm not saying you're not allowed to put a yarmulke on at the wedding. Are you going to a Catholic funeral? Maybe don't cross yourself. I don't know. You know, what I do know is that a lot of you won't do yoga because it's a religious rite of Hinduism, and I respect that. But next time you're reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, you should probably ask yourself what religion that's from. That's all I'm saying, you know? Hopefully now that the election has passed, we can put political matters to bed for a while. But like I said, politics actually affects our everyday lives now. So it's not as easy as just leaving theory to the intellectual realm and talking about stuff that actually matters here on the podcast. Like, now this stuff matters. Like, politics actually affects how you live your Christian life now. This episode is coming out on Election Day, as I said. So as of sometime between now and next week, Joe Biden or Donald Trump is the president-elect. oldest president in history, either way, but just don't get too wrapped up in that. Like, it is fun though. You know, I'm not saying you can't enjoy politics. You know, my wife and I watch the debates and stuff for the entertainment value, and I can't deny that this stuff is a lot of fun, especially from a marketing angle. And I'm interested in the, you know, theory and the, you know, the philosophy. So like, I get a kick out of it. You know, listening to the way that the two sides frame things is, you know, pretty fascinating on the marketing side, and sometimes it's infuriating. But anyways, the high holy day in America has come and will go within 24 hours of this episode dropping, so don't get too wrapped up in this stuff. Remember, it's a false religion, and it deserves the same amount of respect as a false religion. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week. Hopefully on to bigger and better topics next week. I've been your host, Nick, here to tell you to reject the false religion of statism, and if you're as committed to Christ's victory as I am, I'll be here to deal with you all again next week. Goodbye for now.